둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
You know, 6 mornings out of 7, I'm just blown away that we can actually do this again.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the episode, the series. Please do hit that subscribe button. I put out 3 new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, or YouTube for the video versions. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, once again, talking with Johnny Resnick of the Goo Goo Dolls. They're back with a new record called Chaos and Bloom. It's an album that finds these legendary pop rockers going back to their 90s sounds at times, and also connecting with an edgy and angsty sound that had that's sort of been their past. Johnny's going to talk about the effect of the pandemic on his songwriting while considering society's future, as well as TikTok culture and the musicians that are birthed from it. So let's do it. We're talking Chaos and Bloom. It's Kyle Meredith with the Goo Goo Dolls.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you again. You have a brand new record called Chaos and Bloom. The last time that you and I talked, you were telling me that you wanted to go back sort of, I don't know if we said to your roots, but we said to an earlier sound with this one. And I didn't know exactly what that meant at the time, but you've done it. This album is instantly become one of my favorites already. What set that in motion? Why did you want this record to be this record?
You know what? I wanted to produce the record. You know, after I started writing, I was like, okay, I want to produce this because it's like I'm hearing it in my head. Sometimes your original intent can get lost in translation when you work with a lot, you know. Say I hire a producer, you know, you give them a lot of power and influence over what the sound and the direction of the album can be, you know. At its best, because obviously I used other producers on this record to help me out with certain things, you know, so I was wanting other people's input at certain points, you know, but I wanted to sort of still have final say and control over what was going on.
Yeah, it's it feels like there's a little bit of, like, I don't know, betting on yourself
And I mean that as a compliment too. Like I'll quickly use an example. Tears for Fears put out a record this year, and they did the thing where they worked with a lot of songwriters and over the last decade, and it just didn't work out. They scrapped those songs. They said, what happens if we just try to write the album? And it ends up being an amazing record. And I think that's what I'm getting to with what you've done here, because this again hits on everything that I like about your song. Like I can hear your songwriting, and there's nothing against the last few records. I like them too. They were produced records, where this one feels something more direct and personal, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely more direct and it was more personal. And there were a lot of, you know, I'm at a point in my career where I'm like, I love going out and touring, and I love, you know, connecting with our audience is always very, very important. You know, but I wasn't as concerned about what the record company thought or what these people thought or whatever, you know, because it, you know, I wanted to do something that I'm very proud of all the records that we've done. But this one had to be more like, doesn't have to be, I don't have to have a big hit single on it or try to write a big hit single on it, you know, or something like that. You know what I mean? And I did want to bring it back into a situation where it was like, no, I want this to be more edgy. I want this to be a little more angsty. And I think a lot of that came from, you know, kind of being trapped inside for a couple of years, you know, and then it just, you know, interestingly enough, just watching the way the world has changed so much since I put a record out a couple of years ago, you know, 3 years ago or whatever, and then getting to this point.
You know, it's interesting the way you put that, you know, the angstiness maybe being from being trapped inside a little bit, because it made me think, especially when you guys were coming up, your era of bands, a lot of them said the angst come, you look at Seattle, they were always trapped inside, you know. I don't know if there's a parallel there, but it seems like that's an interesting way that you put that, in the same way that you might have put that 30 years ago, you know.
Well, it was a very weird time, you know, and it definitely, I think, has affected, you know, the psyche of the world, you know, and you know, interestingly enough, I was listening to the latest Arcade Fire record about a month ago, and I was like, oh, this is a pandemic record. You know, it really just felt like that. And but you know, we were done with this a month ago, but it's hard not to be affected by what's going on in the world right now. It's hard not to. I mean, I think a lot of music now is very, very sort of escapist in nature, you know. And I didn't really want to be that. I didn't really want to do that.
Well, if there's any singular chord that spells out exactly what you're saying, the opening of Day After Day.
Yeah.
Which might be my favorite moment on the record, that song. I mean, that's, for what we've heard from you in the past few years, this one is sort of jumps out of nowhere on it. I love it. I think it's my favorite. And for anybody who hasn't heard it, there's a creepiness to those opening chords and the feel to it. It eventually does open up.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is that really seems to erupt in that song a lot.
Yeah, well, that was definitely one of the darker moments. That was definitely one of the darker moments. We got up in the morning and I'm sitting there with a piano, bing, bing, bing. And then I'm recording it on my phone. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to say? And it's just, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, it kind of rolls up. I don't really like making political statements, but I think that song kind of encapsulates the kind of the zeitgeist of what's going on in our society at this point. You know, the division between people and you know, the unbearable feeling of being completely out of control. You know, people hate that. I hate feeling like I'm not in control, you know. But you know, and it's sort of all wrapped up in this nice little package where the chorus comes in and it's like, oh, what, okay, we can just, yeah. And then it's kind of like, then you sit and listen to the lyrics. And I always loved songs like that. I could like slip this kind of dark lyric or something where you're trying to say something without being too obvious. You slip it in under a catchy piece of music. It's kind of like, you know, and then it sticks to your brain.
It's a good balance. It's a good balance on that song right there. It was cool. It was cool kind of hearing that type of darkness, you know, within this record. And maybe that goes back to the, you know, what we were talking about at the beginning too, because I don't know, when you decided that you wanted to produce a record, when you decided what kind of record that you wanted to make, did you find that then did direct even what type of songs that you did write?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I got together with our engineer, Chris, and we just kind of sat in a studio, and it's just like playing with drum machines and loops and all this kind of stuff. And just playing free, you know, building beats on a little keyboard, doing things like that. And working on the music. And then I decided it would be a really cool idea to get everybody out in the woods together and record as much of it live as possible within our abilities, within our capacity to do that. And it was like, I was listening to a lot of our live recordings at that time. And I was like, well, there's a certain kind of aggression in the live versions of these songs. You know, they're always a little faster. The guitar sounds are a little heavier, you know, and there's a certain kind of not recklessness, but there's a little more abandon in them, you know? So I was like, well, at the very least, I want to get the drums and the bass and I'll play along. But it was very much like the three principals in the band just kind of like playing and playing and playing and making 30 takes of a song and trying to get that push and pull and trying to, you know, we recorded it on tape, a lot of it, and trying to get that push and that pull and that sort of like, well, this might come off the rails kind of feel at any moment. And then, you know, that was a lot of fun. And I allowed myself, and I went over budget because of it, which is why I consider myself a crap producer, because I went over budget. But I allowed myself to play and experiment when other producers will not allow that to happen. You know, because, you know, there's not a lot of money taking a lot of time to make, you know, you can't make records the way you used to, you know, they don't have the budgets, but, you know, we did okay. And I just allowed myself the time and the freedom to go, you know what, I want to hang that amp off the ceiling and do just experiment with sound, you know, and dig into production notes from like a lot of old records and things like that, and like find out where, like, how did they do that? How did they make that sound like that? Well, let's try to duplicate that, and then let's tweak it a little bit. You know what I mean? It was just things like that. There's a certain, I think this record definitely, one of the things I did not want to do was just edit the crap out of the drums, which is a very modern thing to do, you know? You know, and I did feel like I grabbed a little bit of ground back for the band. You know what I mean? like I'm taking it back now.
You know? It's a rock and roll record. I mean,
it
I think that's
very rock and roll record.
It is a rock and roll record, and again, I think that's one of the things that I love so much about it is that it is warm. And it is, you know, it's, you can hear the moments in there, even if I don't know what they are, those moments that you're talking about, you know, it's just sort of, you can hear the room a little bit. I mean, that's the records that I love so much. You know, when I went back and I was saying, you know, you bet on yourself. And I think that just goes further along in that. I'm sure I also could have been more on the nose and said that You Are the Answer, one of the actual song titles in this that works really well. And that song right there, you know, as you're talking about looking at other records, was Elton John on your mind on that one? Because it feels like that's one of those inescapable things.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Actually, that song came about. Craig, the drummer, was sitting there just banging on a piano out in the live room, just enjoying himself because he plays piano and a lot of other instruments. And it was kind of like, I was like, man, that's really cool. And I just started, sort of singing over the top of what he was playing, and then we just kind of put it all together. And then definitely tried to give it like that classic kind of feel, you know, which was, you know, yeah, which I thought was interesting. Because like I listen to that song and I'm just like, yeah, this song could have been from the 70s or the 80s or now or whatever, you know, but it was like, I just thought it was a chance to really get into something. Like, I feel like that song was very well written, you know, whether it was on purpose or by accident. It just all just sort of, it's one of those things where it just kind of fell together really nicely. And where I did have to get help. I had to, at some point I had to go, okay. And the point that was when I went into the studio to sing all the lyrics. And I went, I can't produce my own vocals. So I had to bring in a guy named Greg Wattenberg, who I've worked with a lot. You know, he and I have written a ton of songs together and collaborated on a lot of different things. And it was just so exciting to work with him again after a few years, because it's like, you know, he just has this command with vocals, you know, he can get the best performance out of me, you know, which I couldn't do myself. I couldn't be objective enough. It was good to have him there.
Mission accomplished on that one. It's a big moment. There's a line in it: searching for truth can be a fool's game.
Yeah.
Stands out pretty good on that one. And I guess, I don't know if I was looking for threads. I guess I, because of my job, I'm always looking for threads and themes, but that starts to seem to be almost like a thesis line of this album. Am I close? Do you sort of see it like that?
I just wonder where we're going. I just wonder where we're going, like, you know, as a people, you know, as a human race, all those kind of things. I you know, as a society, as you know, and, you know, and it's like, I have a 5-year-old now, and it's kind of, when I think about the world that is out there for her, you know, it gives me anxiety because I, you know, am I doing anything to make that world a little better for her? I don't know. I definitely feel like life is maybe getting harder for our kids. You know, it may wind up being more difficult. There seems to be this mad dash to make human beings obsolete, you know, which is really unsettling to me, you know, because I think that the power and the money in this world are starting to become concentrated into fewer and fewer hands, and you know, it's becoming harder to be a normal average human being, you know, just, you know, what are you supposed to do? It's like, you know, I just feel like we need to reprioritize certain things in this country to make ourselves a better nation, emphasizing more education, you know, and funding for education, not keeping it away from people, and you know, so that, to me, that is a really important thing, you know. Plus work, and you know this, it's like work means security, but it also means dignity, and the ability to make the people around you make their lives better. And that was a very scary thought during the pandemic, was like, oh my God, like, I never realized how much meaning my work put into my life, whether anybody liked my music or not. But just that thought of like, am I ever gonna be able to take care of my family? In the future, like, how long is this going to go on? Where are we heading? You know, like, luckily it seems like we're going to be okay. I think America has collectively just, like, it's the only disease ever in the history of mankind where we just said, ah, fuck it, we're done with it. Who cares? You know, it seems to be like, it's just like everyone decided, it's not that important. You know, And so whatever.
That might be, you're right. That might be the weirdest part of the era that we're in, is that it's like, you know, everybody saw the elephant in the room at first, and now we've just kind of pushed the elephant over back to the corner and went, what elephant?
Yeah. I don't know, you're like, what elephant? There's no elephant in this room. All right. Meanwhile,
we're
mutating at an alarming rate. I don't know. To me, the music had to say something without trying to inflict change on your audience. It's just my observations, and it's like, take them for what they're worth.
Well, even that first single, Yeah, I Like You.
Yeah.
When I first heard it, you know, I don't always pick up on the lyrics right away. I'm a rhythm and melody guy as far as my bass, right? Like, I have to really concentrate on the words. But so it wasn't that I, you know, heard that and went, okay, here's a play, a reflection on celebrity, on social media culture. Once I figure that out, once you see the music video, very fun music video, you know, of course that opens that song up to being so much more. But I think I'm just echoing what you're saying right there about how you know can approach these songs, because it's a fun song. But it also, you're right. I you know, my kid, my son is 14. Luckily, he's not entrenched in social media culture. I know plenty about it because of my gig here. But that's one of the weird things. And was there anything specific that set it off for you to you know, become the lyrics that you did?
You know what? I kept hearing so much from everybody during the recording process about TikTok, you know? So I'm like, okay, well, I mean, you know, I better go check this out, you know, because I avoid social media. I don't want to bother with it. But TikTok, and then I was working in a studio where there were a lot of TikTok artists coming into these studios and working with other writers, and it just looked exhausting. And I thought, how does this work? You know, it's interesting. But then, you know, you get into the whole concept of influencers, and like, you know, people become famous for doing nothing, but there's so many incredibly talented people out there, you know? And you know, sometimes I feel like social media is a freak show circling the drain, you know, going down to the lowest common denominator. Now, that being said, there is some pretty amazing stuff, you know. I can make a better blueberry muffin now because of, you know, some 15-second video. But the whole thing, it's just like, what do you do? And it's like, it initially came to me, like, I wanted to write a kind of like a satirical piece on celebrity culture in 2022. And I also wanted to, but it's like someone of my age who is like, may not completely understand where an 18 or 21 year old person is with that whole situation. But still being a little bit fascinated and repulsed by it at the same time. You know, it's like the opening line, I met the queen of generation fame. She said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry. I don't know your name. You know, and she stared at me like I was crazy. Like, how could you not know who I am? I have 10 million followers. Like, well, I'm like, well, I'm not one of them. So I have no idea who you are, you know? And then, so she leans in and sarcastically says to me, who are you? And I say, doesn't matter. You wouldn't know who I am anyway. And then they start to get into each other's lives, you know. And the guy, from this perspective, it's not a relationship song, but it's just sort of like he's looking at these people's lives, and they look so exciting and so fun, but they're not, you know. And it's like, you know, we're all desperately seeking attention in this modern world of the future, you know. And the whole, I was never a fan of Andy Warhol, but the one thing I will say about him is his prediction that everyone would be famous for 15 minutes. It's like, we've gone beyond that. Everyone is famous for 15 seconds, you know. And even further pushing that concept, you know, infamy is as good as fame. Yeah. Being infamous is as good as being famous. I mean, if you create a shitstorm, you know, doesn't matter. It's almost like the id of humanity has just been opened wide, and it doesn't matter what you throw at the world, you know, as long as you're getting attention. I mean, you know, I think we have to be very careful. Sorry, I'm all heavy and weird. Sorry.
I was hoping you would. You know, it's interesting. You were saying, you're like, how could you not know me? I have 10,000 followers, or 10 million followers, sorry. And it's so different because, you know, when the Goo Goo Dolls came up, you know, the monoculture was still very much in effect. If yeah. you sold 10 million CDs, you would have most of the world knew your name. If you went yeah. diamond, most of the world knew your name.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I mean, everybody knew. I was trying to think of diamond records in the 90s, like Hootie and the Blowfish. Everybody knew that term, even if they, you know, they just knew who that was.
Right.
But you're right. I am so surprised over and over and over who I will find online who has that many. And I'm like, there's so many people that have that many, and I don't know who you are. How is
I
that?
I no idea who that? You are. Yeah, I just think that whereas like there were sort of gatekeepers and tastemakers and people who guided us through traditional media channels like newspapers, magazines, television shows, things like that. It's just the whole thing has just exploded, you know? Yeah, there's something for everybody. I mean, it's funny because I was talking to a friend of mine who's a very, very smart person. And he's like, think of the most ridiculous, weird thing and then Google it. And I guarantee you will find your community. And it's sort of like, whereas like in the old days, it's just like, well, I'm just a weirdo on my own doing this. It's like, now there's a community for everything. I mean, and he's like, there is nothing you can think up in your mind that will not be there. And sort of like, wow, it's sort of strange. In one sense, it democratizes the whole thing. Things like, you know, yeah, I guess Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of thing. It kind of democratizes the whole thing where the internet has kind of democratized music in a weird way. But now that is being manipulated and controlled by, you know, a few masters of the universe, which, you know, it makes me very uncomfortable how power is so concentrated in the hands of the few. Whereas like, you know, but yeah. I mean, I think that there is so much incredible stuff, but if it doesn't have enough makeup on, and I mean makeup in a metaphorical sense, if it's not polished and sparkly and viral, you know, it's like a lot of things get overlooked and a lot of things of value get overlooked. But I don't know if value is even, I was brought up and my influencers when I was growing up, you know, see, hey man, you try to create something of value. You want to leave something behind. You're an artist. You try to leave something behind that is of value. And I don't know if that's that important anymore. I think the desire for fame and approval and likes is more important than the content of what you're creating. You know, they took the counter on the dislike button off, so you can't see how many people dislike something, but you can see how many people like it. So it's kind of like, well, I can't make an educated decision. Well, that's the point. Don't worry about it. We're going to create an algorithm that's going to do your thinking for you. So it's like, you know, and then they attach little buzzwords to it, like curated. It's like bullshit. I don't want my life curated for me other than by me, you know? And it's like, you know, the world has definitely changed. I mean, I used to hang out in an indie record shop and listen to the college radio station and subscribe to 20 different fanzines that would come to my house, and they were printed on a copy machine and stapled together. And that's how we got ourselves out there. Now it's like you go instantly, point to mass, potentially hundreds of millions of people seeing you instantly. That's kind of jarring, I think, in the evolutionary process. I think technology has outpaced the evolution of human beings and their ability to process all this information and to make change. Change is coming at a revolutionary hyper speed now, where change was a bit more gradual before. And I think we as human beings are cognitively having a hard time keeping up with it, you know, and it's causing a lot of distress.
It's interesting, especially in comparison, like listening to how you sing about these sorts of things on songs like a Big Machine or What a Scene, you know, like what we were thinking then and then what it even went further on and become, you know. That's, I don't know if that's good.
I don't know. You know,
those songs are great, by the way. It's still great. 20 years for Gutterflower.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm really proud of this record and I hope everybody likes it, you know. You know, that's really the bottom line. And it's like, you know, I never forget that, like, what the majority of what I do is I want to entertain people. You know, I'm an entertainer as well as a writer. I like to think of myself more as a songwriter than anything else, because to me, that's what's got lasting value. But yeah, I mean, I like to entertain people. You know, I get ticked off at other artists that I see who, like, you go to see them play and you spend $200 to go see them play and they don't play their biggest hit. And I've had conversations with a couple of them about that. Like, what's your problem? You know, that song bought you a mansion. Like, what is your problem? You're shitting on your audience, you know, by being a pretentious prima donna. Don't do that. It's not good.
Well, I'll close by saying thank you for all the hits through the years.
Oh man, I'm lucky.
Yeah, and this album, I meant it. This instantly became one of my favorite records you did. When I heard it, it sounded so perfect to me, and the songs are so well written and done. So so Johnny, dude, congratulations on this. This record, Chaos in Bloom, it's outstanding, really.
And I was gonna say, you know, just in closing, you don't look like you're old enough to have a 14-year-old kid. You guys, you get mistaken for brothers?
Well, that'd be funny. I'm 40 now, so you know, I'm starting to appreciate those moments right there. Thank you.
Yeah, I tell you, man, I know. I didn't have a kid until I was 50, and I'm like, oh my god, is my back gonna hold out?
No filters, though. I'm not using internet filters, so I haven't gone that far.
Oh no, don't bother. You don't need them.
All right, man. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I cannot wait to hear these songs live.
It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to the tour this summer. All right. Hopefully we'll come out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, man. We'll see you around.
Thank you. Good to see you.
My thanks to Johnny Resnick. Goo Goo Dolls, the new album is called Chaos in Bloom. If you search further in this Kyle Meredith With podcast series, the other episodes, Kyle Meredith With Goo Goo Dolls, you're going to find the not only the interview that we did just last year about their B-sides collection, as we also talked about soundtrack cuts, but all the interviews that I've done with the band throughout the past as well. Search further on in, search Kyle Meredith With further on in this podcast series. Thanks to you as well for checking out the episode in the series. Do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every week. New ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcast, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Facebook, Instagram, mostly on Twitter, all of them at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.